WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. Tim Curry became a star and was typecast for decades when he reprised his British stage role of sweet transvestite Frankenfurter in the 1975 cult film musical The Rocky Horror Picture Show. 30 years later, he's back on stage, this time on Broadway, in a role and play inspired by a film. The film is Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and the musical, Spamalot, is the big hit of the Broadway season and a frontrunner at Sunday's Tony Awards. Tim Curry isn't just in Spamalot, he's at its center as the grail-seeking King Arthur.
I am Arthur, King of the Britons, and we are seeking men who are able. And so we're recruiting Dennis to sit at our very, very, very round table.
Ready!
Who's the king?
You are!
Who's the king?
You are! A-R-T-H-U-R-I-T-H-E-R!
Spamalot is written by Monty Python member Eric Idle and directed by Mike Nichols. In addition to Tim Curry, Spamalot features Hank Azaria, from whom we'll hear in the second half of the show, as well as David Hyde Pierce and Sarah Ramirez. Terry spoke to Tim Curry in March when Spamalot was about to open. She asked him how he got involved with the show.
I've known Eric Idle a long time, one of the original Pythons, and he now lives in Los Angeles, as do I. And so we see each other quite a bit. And in fact, the summer before last, we were hoping to do a film together, which he had written and was going to direct, which was a kind of demolition of every Miramax movie ever made, called The Remains of the Piano. And that never quite happened because the money... It's a good title, isn't
very
it?
Very good, very good.
I was going to play the Reverend Whoopsie. And Robin Williams was going to play Vanessa Redgrave in Howard's End. I loved his lines, which were stuff like, You, I haven't met you before. You shall have the teacup when I go. No, you shall have the grand piano. No, you shall have the house. So that never happened, but he said, I think it looks like we are finally going to get to do the musical version of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and we're going to call it Spamalot. And first of all, I thought that was just terribly funny. But I also thought, oh, well, you know, I'll believe it when it happens. And then suddenly Mike Nichols was directing it, and they put David Hyde Pierce and Hank Azaria and I and a couple of other people on a plane from California, and we came into New York and we sat down and read it with a bunch of other people from New York, some of whom are in the play. And it just went like gangbusters, and I guess the next day I was going to be King Arthur.
So Spamalot incorporates some classic Monty Python bits in it. That I assume a lot of people in the audience probably know by heart. What kind of response do you get when you get to the classic parts?
It's quite interesting because the audience always sort of contains some core of Monty Python fans who see stuff coming, you know, and react with great whoops of joy. And then settle down to see it unfold. I mean, they're hugely welcoming, and then they really want to see it happen. I mean, happily, they're not talking along with it, because that would, you know, that would need a spanking. But but they love it, and they see it coming, and they are thrilled to see characters and sketches that they recognize.
You knew the Monty Python material, and the audience knows a lot of the Monty Python material. But do you know a lot of the early Nichols and May sketches?
I do. I was always a fan, And so it was sort of very interesting for me to work with him. And he has a first of all, every note that you ever get from Mike is preceded by, "That was wonderful. That was wonderful. One small thing." So you're given this enormous sort of sense of entitlement, and then, something tiny and completely accurate is lodged like a little sort of Navajo arrow in your brain. And what his great note, I think, because I was playing it pretty broadly at the beginning, because so much of it is like something that we in England call pantomime and sort of is part of vaudeville, really. And his first note and recurring note to me is, "Yes, that's great. It's, you know, it's very funny. Now let's make it true." And I think that's his great gift to this material, is that he's given it a great big sort of beating Arthurian heart. And that's an extra dimension that you just sort of don't expect. And of course, also makes it so much more interesting to play.
Tim Curry speaking with Terry Gross. Let's hear something else from the Broadway musical Spamalot. David Hyde Pierce from Frasier in his show-stopping second act number called You Won't Succeed on Broadway. The king is seeking his advice.
"Have you heard of this Broadway?"
"Yes, sire. And we don't stand a chance there."
"Why not?"
"Because Broadway is a very special place, filled with very special people. People who can sing and dance, often at the same time. They are a different people, a multi-talented people, a people who need people, and who are, in many ways, the luckiest people in the world." "I'm sorry, sire. We don't have a chance."
"But why?"
"Well, let me put it like this. In any great adventure, if you don't want to lose, victory depends upon the people that you choose. So listen, Arthur, darling, closely to this news. We won't succeed on Broadway if we don't have any Jews. You may have the finest sets, fill the stage with penthouse pets. You may have the loveliest costumes and best shoes. You may dance and you may sing, but I'm sorry, Arthur King, you'll hear no cheers, just lots and lots of boos. You may have butch men by the score, whom the audience adore. You may even have some animals from zoos. Though you've poles and krauts instead, you may have unleavened bread, but I tell you, you are dead if you don't have any Jews. They won't care if it's witty or everything looks pretty. They'll simply say it's shitty and refuse. Nobody will go, sir. If it's not kosher, then no show, sir. Even Goyim won't be dim enough to choose. Put on shows that make men stare with lots of girls in underwear. You may even have the finest of reviews.
You're doing great!
But the audiences won't care, sir, as long as you don't dare, sir, to open up on Broadway
if we don't have any Jews.
Music from Spamalot, the Eric Idle musical starring David Hyde Pierce, Hank Azaria, and Tim Curry. More with Tim Curry after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're listening back to an interview Terry Gross recorded earlier this year with actor Tim Curry. Curry became famous for his starring role in the 1975 cult classic The Rocky Horror Picture Show as Dr. Frankenfurter, the sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Here he is welcoming two naive strangers, Brad and Janet, played by Barry Bostwick and Susan Sarandon, to his isolated estate.
Magenta. Columbia. Go and assist Riff Raff. I will entertain...
Brad Majors. This is my fiancée, Janet Weiss.
Weiss?
Enchanté. Well, nice. And what charming underclothes you both have. But here, Put these on. They'll make you feel less vulnerable. It's not often we receive visitors here, let alone offer them hospitality.
Hospitality? All we wanted to do was to use your telephone. Damn it, a reasonable request, which you've chosen to ignore.
Dad, don't be ungrateful.
Ungrateful?
How forceful you are, Brad. Such a perfect specimen of manhood. So dominant.
You know, like so many other of your fans, I first saw you in the Rocky Horror Picture Show in the 70s. And when you see somebody in a movie for the first time, it's sometimes hard to tell how good they are. You don't know, is this all they can do? Do they do other things too? Is this what they're really like? Or, you know, how much are they acting? And so I saw you, I guess it was probably like the late 80s, in Wise Guy, the TV series.
Yes.
And you played a kind of Phil Spector-ish, brilliant but crazy record producer.
That's right.
And a great, really terrific performance. And that's, as I think, is when I really got the picture. Wow, he's really good at doing all kinds of things.
So. That's so nice. I mean, it's sort of important for me because, you know, that first performance that sort of introduced me to everybody was so out there and so...
I'll say, yeah.
So kind of outrageous that, you know, I was a very quiet boy for a while, you know, just to make sure that people got it, that, you know, that wasn't necessarily who I was.
Was that because
it was my first movie, you know?
That was your first movie?
Yeah.
How did you get the part?
I got the part because I used to work a great deal at a theatre in London called the Royal Court. And I guess they have a little theater upstairs which seats about 60 people, and I did Brecht there, and I did a sort of Rudyard Kipling show there, and I guess the next show, I did a dreadful musical, a Marxist musical called Give the Gaffers Time to Love You, with a director who kept saying, Barry, the second act just simply isn't Marxist enough. And that, of course, never even opened to the critics. But the next show coming in was this other musical called The Rocky Horror Show. And originally I played Frankenfurter as though he was German. He was Dr. Frankenfurter, and everything was very interesting and stupid. And then one day I heard a woman on a bus saying, do you have a house in town or a house in the country? And I thought, yes, she should sound like the Queen. So
that's
he
great.
Should sound like the Queen. So, but that's how it happened, and it just started in this tiny theater, you know, and it just took off like a sort of rocket.
Did you like the kind of cheap horror films that it in part parodied?
Oh, absolutely, and I mean it. Richard's brilliance really was just, you know. It was really like reaching up a hand into the zeitgeist and just grabbing, you know, horror, 50s horror movies, Sandra Dee, comic books, and 50s rock and roll, and just hurling them all together with the, you know, some fishnet tights thrown in. And the fishnet tights really, you know, came from a brilliant costume designer called Sue Blaine, who I'd worked with before, actually, in a wonderful theatre in Scotland called the Glasgow Citizens Theatre, where we did a production of The Maids, where I wore exactly that corset.
The Jean Genet play?
The Jean Genet play. I played Solange, and we bought the corset for £3 off a barrow in the market in Glasgow and wore it back to front.
That's funny, you'd be wearing it in for, like, this transgressive playwright, Genet, and then this kind of parody
well,
of everything, Rocky Horror.
Absolutely.
Well, there's probably nothing that can get you into character quickly, like black bikini briefs, fishnet stockings, the garter belt, the corset, the whole, whole thing.
Well, absolutely. But that was a fairly late development. I mean, I had no idea it was going to be like that.
You until, didn't when you accepted the part?
No. I thought I'd be in a white lab coat, you know. And, I mean, the great gag about... you know, the way that we all looked was, and I've always said this to anybody who's ever asked me about playing Frankenfurter, if they were playing it, you know, to just never think about it as drag, because it's not. It's just what people wear in Transylvania. You know, it's just what everybody wears in Transylvania, so just get over it, you know? It's truck driver drag. It's not about going boop, boop, a doob. It's just what they happen to wear.
I think the thing I found most amazing about the whole phenomenon of Rocky Horror was watching, like, the 12-year-olds outside the theater parading around in their transvestite clothes. Because they were all, it was like all these 12-year-olds outside the theater imitating you in your getup. And you had to just kind of ask yourself, what is going on here? What do the 12-year-olds make of it? I mean, are they going through some kind of gender thing, or do they just love the movie? Like, what is this about?
I think it's all of the above. It's a kind of rite of passage now, I think. And actually, first of all, it's a guaranteed weekend party to which you can go with or without a date and probably find one if you don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, I think, a chance for people to try on a few roles for size, you mm-hmm. know, help them maybe figure out their own sexuality. I mean, I think that's probably taking it a little deeper than it needs to go, but I think it has had a useful purpose in that way, and I've certainly had some very interesting and moving mail from people who have said, you know, thanks for helping me figure out who I was, you know, and that's very nice.
Now, your father was a chaplain in the British Navy.
Yes.
What did your parents think of your role in Rocky Horror?
Well, he, alas, was dead, because he died when I was 12.
Oh.
So he wasn't even aware that I was an actor, even. I think my mother, who, you know, is really like one of those sort of Monty Python ladies, you know.
I can't imagine what's going on.
you know, who always had a hat. And since my first job in the theatre was hair and, you know,
and you were probably naked in that, right?
And I did appear naked in it. I think, you know, it was a relief to her that I actually was wearing clothes of any kind in
At least
in
you
Rocky
were covered
Horror
by a corset and garters.
She was happily unaware that that part of the character, particularly Frankenfurter at his most gracious, was based on her.
In what way?
Well, it was sort of her telephone voice, you know. Do you have any tattoos, Brad? my sister, when she saw it, fell on the floor and said, you know, does she know? And I said, no, she has absolutely no idea, and please don't tell her. She thought it was very, very amusing and brought all her friends. So she was pretty hip lady, my mother, and she got it. I mean, you know, astonishingly, she loved it.
Really
she didn't
funny.
Like it as much as the Pirates of Penzance, which I did at Drury Lane. Because the Queen Mother came to that, and that, you know, was the total seal of approval of my career.
And I would bet that the Queen Mother did not go to Hair or Rocky Horror.
I don't think she went to either, although Princess Margaret did come to Rocky Horror and had a wonderful time.
Really?
And so did Princess Diana actually requested to meet me because she was such a Rocky Horror fan.
So did you ever meet Princess Diana?
I did actually meet Princess Diana. I was doing a production of Love for Love, and it was taken to Vienna for British Week, and we played at the Burgtheater, and Prince Charles and Princess Diana were the guests of honor, and which was when she said that she very much wanted to meet me, and so they sort of put me at the end of the receiving line, And Prince Charles said, I think I've seen you on television. Haven't I seen you on television? I said, yes, sir, I'm sure you've seen me on television. Yes, I thought I'd seen you on television. But Diana said, you were in the Rocky Horror Show. And I said, yes, ma'am, I was. And I was, but I'm sure that you haven't seen it. She said, oh, yes, she said. It quite completed my education. She was a very funny girl, and a very beautiful one, and sort of a very wicked smile came with that sentence. She was great fun, the world is poorer without her.
Tim Curry speaking with Terry Gross. He's nominated for a Tony for his role as King Arthur in the Monty Python Broadway musical Spamalot. We'll hear more with Tim Curry in the second half of the show. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.